6:05. It's good to have you here this Thursday morning.
Friday Eve.
Friday Eve, as Lloyd says. That's right. Really, you should get like a half a yay, right, for Friday Eve?
Yeah, kind of.
Yay!
Exactly. All right, that's enough.
I tried hitting the button fast, but it wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work, okay.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so Donald Trump spoke last night.
He sure did.
He had the nice garland behind him.
Oh, yeah.
The decorations were on point.
They were very nice. Were everything looked very nice. I will say, I always like a presidential address. Like, to me, it feels like there's something to it. Right. And you've seen, like, in the movies, everything that they do to prep for this.
Yeah.
Right. And all the major messages by presidents from the White House, all the work that gets done right up until the last second, the makeup that's being applied. Is my hair OK? Your tie's askew. Like, everything, all the inner workings of it. I find it so fascinating. And then
did you find that more of a presidential address or more of a almost like a rally?
I didn't think of it as a rally.
I did.
You thought of it as a rally.
Yeah, yes. He was kind of hype. He was hype.
No, he got he got
hype.
A little loud at some point.
Yeah, he was
hype. I was like, whoa. I didn't think of it as a rally.
Okay.
I thought of it as he is befuddled as to why the poll numbers aren't better. He's befuddled at where the Republicans stand in these midterms. I think he's confused by the reaction of some of the American people, some in his base.
Yeah, yeah.
By the things and the outcomes that have come from his decisions. Because in his perspective, he's coming through on a lot of the issues that he talked about on the campaign trail.
Right.
And he had a big win, won the popular vote.
And the ones he's not coming through with, it's the last administration's fault after 11
months.
Well,
and then there's some of that, of course. Of course. I mean, Joe Biden was talking about Donald Trump until the end anyway, right? Yeah. I mean, it never really goes away.
Donald Trump was running in the election.
No, that's true,
Biden's
too.
Biden's well in the rear view, but
yeah.
He continues to bring
up. That's true, too. But I just felt it was a moment where he's confused as to the reaction of his moves by the voting electorate. And to your point, he talked about the quote unquote mess that he inherited when he took over.
11 months ago, I inherited a mess and I'm fixing it. When I took office, inflation was the worst in 48 years. And some would say in the history of our country, which caused prices to be higher than ever before, making life unaffordable.
What he does is he says the same things over and over again, but that doesn't mean it's true. When he took office, inflation was at 3%. Do you know what inflation is right now?
3.01%.
Right. It's the same. And yes, inflation hit about a 40-year high in 2022,
right.
But that was 2 years before he came to office. Mm-hmm. So, like, these are things that are easily researched and debunked, but he continues to say them.
Well, I thought yesterday that just the hypeness of the hypeness of the president, almost to the point where I think I agree with you, Chris, that he was just upset. Like he was getting upset, almost coming off of that kind of mad. Like, why don't you understand that I'm doing all these great things and my numbers are bad, and why are you doing this?
Well, and to be fair to him, you know, when the tariff situation really started ramping up, what did we hear from a lot of economists? This is going to throw us into an absolute tailspin.
Oh, yeah.
We are going to go into a recession. It is going to be some very dark days. Well, that never came, right?
Nope.
And we can talk about the legitimacy of the tariffs. We can talk about whether this is the right approach. All of that can be debated. But we didn't. It didn't end up the way that many thought it would. Okay, so from his perspective, he's going, look, I'm trying to rework things. Mm-hmm. And I think you look at the system, it's a wonky system. It's half of it's broken. So he's trying to redo the whole thing. He's trying to take a totally different approach, which I can appreciate in some aspects.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But in others, you don't need to reinvent the wheel in some cases. Right.
Agreed.
So I just think that he just came across as like, I'm doing these things. We fixed immigration. Well, we stopped illegal border crossings. I don't think we really fixed immigration.
Well, once again, he can run. He can stand on the fact that he did do a lot for the border.
Yes.
The border is completely changed. But when you say not a zero illegal aliens have entered the country, you know, last month or whatever, like you can't. you can fact check these things. Like, one person might have come across the border or come into our country via air. These are things that can be researched and looked up. He likes to talk in hyperbole and like everything's the greatest in the history.
Yeah. He also talked a lot about affordability.
He did.
And it wasn't a hoax. It wasn't a Democratic hoax. This is something that people care about. You know, he talked about housing costs.
In the new year, I will announce some of the most aggressive housing reform plans in American history.
Great. Love to see it.
Yeah.
Love to see it. We got a problem. We got a problem. And again, I said this yesterday. I've been saying this for a long time. What people are feeling is different than what is it's oftentimes being reported.
Yes.
What I mean, you went to the grocery store, bought five things, spent $100.
Right.
Right? You go, anywhere you shop, getting Christmas presents time of year, things are expensive.
Uh-huh.
So it is what people are feeling at the ground level. People who go to work, people who pay their bills, people who got to come home and make dinner for their families, they are still experiencing a hike in these costs of goods and services. So it's different. It's different. And that was the disconnect in the Biden administration.
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely.
So there's a little bit of that here. And I think it was an interesting speech. I didn't know really what to expect, but I didn't quite expect like a recap of the year and then kind of a moving forward. Cause like you mentioned before we got on, like the State of the Union's coming up too.
Yeah.
Which it'll be the same kind of speech.
Yes.
So to me, I thought it was going to be like a Christmas message to everybody. It wasn't that. And I thought it was going to be an update on Venezuela.
That's what I was waiting for. I was waiting for an update on Venezuela, but never came.
No, and I didn't really think that they were going to talk about what they were going to do with Venezuela, but I didn't know really what to expect, and it was just basically a recap, and it was like, here's the things that we're doing.
No, numbers go up. Acknowledge
the things that we're doing, basically.
Numbers rise.
Yeah, so that was pretty interesting. Also, just a side note, FBI Deputy Director Dan Bongino leaving the agency. In January,
it was rumored.
There were rumors and reports that his office was empty.
Yes,
and there was
he didn't like come to work for a week.
Yeah,
in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a letter put out by current and former FBI officials that were saying, you know, things aren't operating in the agency very well.
Yeah, and he's the day-to-day guy as the deputy.
And so, so you know, Dan Bongino's leaving, which is whatever. I mean, it's
the president says he's going back to his show.
Oh, is he?
That's what the president said.
Oh,
he
says,
I think he's going back to his show.
Okay, maybe that's the case.
You know, in the president's first term, there was all this turnover and turmoil and people moving about. There hasn't really been that.
No.
This would be the first person to be like, out.
There's been turmoil.
There's been turmoil.
I mean,
but not turnover.
Not turnover.
Right, correct. Yeah, certainly.
A federal judge has ruled that Michigan cannot block construction of the controversial Line 5 pipeline beneath the Straits of Mackinac. The 645-mile oil pipeline operated by Canadian company Enbridge has been at the center of a years-long battle. As you know, we've been up north to that information center up there, and we broadcasted from there. And Enbridge wants to relocate a section of the pipeline into the tunnel beneath the Great Lakes lake bed, a plan that the state of Michigan has repeatedly opposed over environmental concerns. Yesterday, U.S. District Judge Robert Jonker ruled that federal law overrides the state's authority in this case. And in his decision, Jonker wrote that while the pipeline safety and protection of the straits are critical, regulation of Line 5 is the responsibility of the federal government and not the state of Michigan.
To me, it's a no-brainer.
Absolutely.
Take it off the lake bed and get it underground. I mean, it makes the most sense to me.
It also makes sense that it is a national issue, sometimes international, and not just state of Michigan.
Yeah. Certainly. But we'll continue to talk about this address by Donald Trump last night. We've got John Selleck, the CEO of Harbor Strategic. He is the chief strategist there. We'll talk to him. We also want to get your thoughts. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. It's JR Morning.
Gasoline is now under $2.50 a gallon in much of the country. In some states, it, by the way, just hit $1.99 a gallon.
I'd like to know where those gas stations are.
I know, that's right.
I haven't seen $1.99. But gas prices are coming down. It is one of the areas where energy is coming down.
I went to BJ's. You know, that's my spot
that's
to get
spot.
My gas.
Yep.
$2.24.
I think that's a very skewed. And I don't think you should be telling people that.
Lloyd's more closer. As of Wednesday, there are only four states whose average price for a gallon of regular gas was below $2.50, according to AAA.
So nothing is at $1.99 yet.
Is that the national average?
It's a national average.
Okay.
And apparently there are about 100 stations that do have $1.99 gas.
Yeah.
But there are like 100,000 stations.
Yeah, right. Okay. So still a very small sample size. Yeah. But Donald Trump talked a lot about affordability last night. Let's talk to John Selleck, the CEO and chief strategist at Harbor Strategic. John, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I mean, talking about politics like this is a lot more soothing when we have the Christmas music playing.
Let's just talk about
Christmas. You saw President Trump. He didn't do the speech from his desk in his office like he's been doing. He did it in front of a warm fireplace with garland all around and a Christmas tree. And everyone's trying to take advantage of the Christmas spirit.
That's exactly right. What did you make of Donald Trump's address to the nation last night?
Well, I think not only he personally realizes he's got to start talking about costs, but to me, it's the people in his party that are running for re-election in Congress and people who are running for open seats in the U.S. Senate, like Mike Rogers. They're like, we need some help here. You are the biggest holder of the bullhorn. You're the president of the United States. And so I think what we're seeing is just the front end of a series of tactics the president will use to try to change the conversation to the economy. I think for a long time, people felt we were really focused on foreign affairs, and in a lot of cases, rightly so. But, you know, there's never a time not to bring up Christmas again where you understand what prices are like than when you're buying presents for your families and loved ones. And so he needed to get going and address that. I just think this is the very front end of a lot of different tactics we'll see where he tries to enter that fight on the domestic agenda.
John, there was, to me, a lot of grievance rhetoric in the speech, too. And from a strategic standpoint, you know, when a president is facing a tough midterm, is it more effective to lean into that sense of being under attack by the past administration? Or does there come a point where the, you know, I inherited a mess argument kind of loses its punch when it comes to, you know, independent voters and other voters?
Right. That's a great point. And one thing the president has always been good at is finding a quote enemy, unquote, as a rallying point for his team and for what he says he's working against. And that's the problem most presidents get into, that what is the honeymoon? When does it end? Was it 3 months in? Was it 6 months in? Where now it's all on your plate. And, you know, he's making maybe one of the only cases he can here is this is going to take a while, and that wasn't my fault. Remember why you picked me, because it was such a disaster. But, you know, my sense is we're pretty much at the outer edge or a little past the ability to do that. He pulled that out last night as a reminder of how he got elected and what he's doing, but it still is on his plate to do something about it. And I think he recognized that. That's why he was doing this speech, even, you know, Lloyd. And so I don't know, we'll probably see him bring up President Biden, and maybe President Biden misses being in the mix. He'll be glad to be brought up again when people see him on TV now.
You kind of addressed this, but just the timing of everything, Wednesday before Christmas, making the speech about, like, look at all the things I've done. Why do you think do it then and there?
I think if any of us could figure out the timing and the weave of how things work here, we'd be really wealthy people.
Well, the strategist. What do you think? Why?
Well, my sense is the latest thing that was taking the president's team off balance was this Vanity Fair thing. And that's not the only reason a president goes out and gives a speech about the economy. The economy, you know, the economy stupid. That's the number one issue almost always. And it was for the president to win this time, and it'll be for the Republicans next year. If they're going to try to hold on to Congress and a lot of other things like winning the Michigan governor's race. And just a number of things seem to be taking the president away from directly addressing the economy. He's not the kind of guy that's going to go, I feel your pain. So he's not going to go there, but he does have to at least start talking about it and be combative about it. I think the Vanity Fair thing was maybe a final straw into like, whoa, we need to get back on message here. But, you know, he previously too, Jamie, had tried spinning that costs were a hoax or something that, you know, the Democrats invented. And that's the problem with all the stats that he put out there last night. It doesn't really matter to me if they were all right or all wrong. There's a mixed bag there for sure. It's the sense that people won't believe it no matter what, because their general overall mood is this sucks. This is terrible. It's not going well. You can tell me that one thing went down in price, but I'm still suffering. This effort is like turning a ship. It's taken down many presidents. What I think this president has to be concerned about is keeping a Republican majority, at least one of the houses, going into next year, because just on a policy basis, if he loses control of the House and the Senate, the second 2 years of his presidency are going to be pretty limited to proclamations and sending off investigations and fights from the Democrats. That is really the main thing I see him thinking. When I come back from vacation in January, I want all my members of Congress running for election to feel like I started the effort to turn the ship on the economy.
John Selleck, always appreciate the insight. Thank you. If we don't talk to you, have a Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Same to all three of you.
Yeah, you got
it. Thank you.
Here's the other part, too. From a strategic perspective, mm-hmm. where I think this was smart, if Donald Trump has a Christmas party at the White House and he's got supporters there and he addresses the crowd there, there, of course, would be media there. There, of course, would be coverage. But, you know, the CNNs of the world, what is it, MS Now?
MS Now,
you know,
yeah.
They have a propensity not to carry some of Donald Trump's events,
That's
speeches,
right.
things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
What he forced them into doing last night, because he addressed the nation, right, from the White House, everybody broke programming.
That's right.
ABC, NBC, CBS, everybody cut into what they were what they had scheduled to carry this presidential address. And so he was able to get out in front of everybody. He was able to get out in front of the entire country. And I think to a certain extent, to John's point, provide some sort of cover for some of these other Republicans that are running for these seats that might be up for grabs, going, we need to adjust this. We need to take control, back control mm-hmm. of the narrative on affordability. We need to show people what we've done so that that will help us in the midterms.
Well, the reason that the network stopped covering his long speeches, because they're long,
right.
A, and B, they continued to say facts that weren't true, which happened again last night. And when John was like, you know, some facts were right and some facts were wrong, like, for me, I can't take it when the facts are so easily researched and not true. That really bothers me, but that's something within me. And the school I went to a journalism school where you are right when you say
But again,
something.
That's yeah. not unique to Donald Trump. He maybe does it a little more.
He does it way more.
But presidents go up there and smudge the facts a lot.
Yeah, we fact-checked all of them. We fact-checked all of them, but I don't know if we fact-checked as much as this.
Well, that's I'm not saying that's not true, but I'm saying right. this isn't. It's not unique to Donald Trump where
no,
they go up
no,
and,
it's not. It's
and,
not.
And boost up their numbers a little bit. We'd love to hear from you what you thought of Donald Trump's address to the nation last night. What was your reaction? You heard it here on WJR, 800-859-0957. It's JR Morning. All right, so Donald Trump addressed the nation last night, talked about affordability, talked about immigration, and again, really to set the record straight in his mind, try to set the record straight with the American people that what he is doing is going to be successful. What he has done has reworked a lot of what he sees as the shortcomings of the Biden administration.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being very nice, because I, you know, Donald Trump didn't take that approach.
No, he
You know, it's
no.
it's their fault.
A little bit
it's
more defiant.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
And so that was the overarching message I took from it. What did you take from it? 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. You can call or text. We have texts listening to the president is sad. He sounds desperate. Wait till your taxes this year. You're going to be happy. Get behind this guy and support him. Hold on. I had one other one here. Sounds like, well, I don't know. Oh, here it is. We need to remember it's every president's duty to continue to provide us a sustainable means to be successful. The raw incentives without the overburden of all the taxation. So again,
deregulation. Yes. Uh-huh.
That's a big part.
Yeah. People are interested in that. Uh-huh. And the tax breaks. Absolutely.
Yep.
You know, here's the other part that I find strange, because Donald Trump is not your traditional conservative. OK, he strays from the conservative ideology pretty frequently. Last night, he also talked about rolling out what he is calling these dividend payments, warrior dividends mm-hmm. to more than a million members of the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Andrew Yang?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When he was running for president?
Yep.
As a Democrat? His platform essentially was, I'm going to give you $1,000 a month, something like that, quarterly. It was some crazy amount of money.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, how is that going to work? That doesn't make much sense to me. And I was very critical of that because that's stupid. Doesn't make any sense. I don't know why you would take this approach other than it being political. Now, no shade to our service members.
No.
It is not meant to be that they don't deserve more, because mm-hmm. they do deserve more. They deserve way more. They deserve way more in the structure. They deserve way more in their pay. They deserve way more in their benefits. I can't say enough about what our military members do for us.
Yeah.
But just shelling out money feels like you're trying to appease, you're trying to garner more votes. And mm-hmm. that's been the Democrats' MO. That has been their MO.
Yeah.
Why would you look at a time in history when the idea of being a Democrat and their platform is so unpopular? Why would you dip into that pool? It doesn't make any sense to me. But it's one of the things that he talked about was these warrior dividends.
1,450,000 military service members will receive a special, we call, warrior dividend before Christmas, a warrior dividend in honor of our nation's founding in 1776.
$1,776, 1776.
Mm-hmm.
Clever. I don't know what the purpose of that is, other than it being political.
Well, and you know, it kind of almost goes with what he talked about when it comes to the insurance, and where he, you know, wants to bypass the insurance companies and send cash directly to families for health care. That's another thing. He hasn't done it yet, but it's kind of on that same leg, too. And I think that's the kind of, you know, be nice to me and look at me and look what I'm doing. I'm sending this to you.
I mean, that to me is a little more like moving the decks around, the chairs around the decks of the Titanic.
Kind
of,
yeah.
Like, you're, instead of it being this way of funneling it through the ACA, you're just going to put it into the HSA accounts and people can do it themselves. That money's going to go somewhere anyway, right?
Yes.
But this is new money that, because of all the money that the tariffs are bringing into the United States, he says that this is possible.
Can you just cut checks from the White House? Don't you have to go through Congress for this? Like, what are the logistics here?
Well, and that might be the play. It might be the play. Because what, is he going to go to Congress and say,
well,
we want to...
Congress left.
We want to...
Yeah.
And
he said
they're in the mail already.
But like, again, just from like the optics of it, you're going to go to Congress and go pass this, and they're going to say, nah. Yeah, that's not a good look either.
Well, no. Do you have $2 billion that you want to do this? Like, these are questions that I think are for Congress.
Well, do you think that they've done enough to stand up to this? Do you think that they should be more involved?
According to the president, people didn't know about it 30 minutes.
That's
ago.
Right. 30
exactly.
minutes.
So I don't
know exactly. if they knew about it.
Well, we'll talk to Tim Walberg about it
coming
up at 6:49 and get his perspective. But again, it's there for you. We'd love to hear from you about what you thought of this speech last night as Donald Trump's address the nation.
You know those pictures in the White House that he put up of all the presidents?
Oh, yeah.
And the auto pen.
Yeah, well, now there are plaques installed under it. And instead of just, like, straight facts about each president, it's mocking the presidents he doesn't like. Yep.
Yeah, the Joe Biden one is pretty wild.
Oh, wow.
There's two plaques.
Okay.
And at one point, he's like, he's known as Sleepy and Crooked. And goes on, worst president in history.
Worst president in American history, referring to Biden's severe mental decline in the plaque, calling his people around him the radical left handlers. This is an official plaque at the White House. Like, what are we doing?
See, I will say, here's where I take a little bit of the Democrats' approach to this, because Donald Trump tends to do so much that, like, you gotta, I don't have enough space in my very, very small brain to let all this clink around. Like, that to me is irrelevant. I mean, like, yeah. It's stupid. It's petty. I don't understand it. To me, it's a very obvious play to the very strong members of the base.
Sure.
I don't understand it. I'd rather talk about, I mean, I'm with you. I think it's worthy of discussion. I just think it's absolutely wild. Absolutely wild.
I find it beneath the office of the president. I say that a lot.
Yeah, well,
and
a lot
it bothers me when things like that go on. I get what you're saying, like, in the grand scheme,
yeah.
Less important.
Yeah.
But then why is the president wasting time doing this?
Yeah.
No,
it's,
I agree.
Kind of petty.
And again, if you take the conservative approach, how much did that cost? I mean, it couldn't have cost that much. But, like, these are official plaques. Like,
yeah.
These are not, like, you know, sticky notes that were
exactly.
put up on this thing. So, like, if we agree that we are spending more than we're bringing in, which is causing our debt to continue to rise and rise and rise.
Yeah.
If we all agree on that, right? And that seems to be the consensus. Facts.
Yeah, yeah. That's it.
Why are we doing things that are counter to that? Why are we doing things that contribute to that as opposed to, let's bring that down? Any little piece works. Any little bit works. Any little bit will help.
Because I want to, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah, but I don't like that.
I don't
that doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
So, like, you're either concerned about it, and this is like Thomas Massie's approach, right? He's like, we're either doing things that are going to help us in the long run, or we're not. And I'm not about that. That's Thomas Massie's approach. And that's kind of where I'm at on things like this. Like, yeah. Even if it cost you $100, which of course it didn't, but some insignificant amount of money. Why?
Yeah.
So you can put it on Twitter?
Yeah.
For social?
And get,
for,
yeah.
For,
get
and
some, get clicks, me, some clicks and likes.
I don't like it. We'll talk to Tim Walberg about his thoughts on Donald Trump's address to the nation next here on JR Morning.
Every home uses energy differently, and Consumers Energy gets that. That's why my personalized offerings is your one-stop shop for tailor-made energy assistance. From payment plans to energy-saving programs, it's designed to meet your household's unique needs. Just log into your account at consumersenergy.com. Click my personalized offerings and answer a few quick questions. It's free, no risk. Only takes minutes to unlock custom money-saving rewards. Count on Consumers Energy to deliver smart, personalized solutions for your home. Welcome back to JR Morning. It was a rapid-fire evening address last night at the White House. President Trump struck a defiant tone, telling the nation that while he inherited a mess 11 months ago, he is successfully fixing it. And as the GOP prepares for a high-stakes midterm cycle next year, the president laid out a vision to combat soaring consumer prices, and he touted a new warrior dividend for our troops and proposed a major shift in how Americans pay for health care. And joining us now to discuss what this means for the families and businesses of Southern Michigan, and is a key ally of the administration, and he's the chairman of the House Committee on Education and the Workforce, Congressman Tim Walberg. Congressman, it's good to have you back on the show.
It's great to be back with you, and so we don't run out of time to say Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, a wonderful New Year to all of you.
Thank you so much, and back at you as well. Congressman, the president announced this warrior dividend, the 1776, for our service members, and as someone who represents a district that has, you know, some strong veteran presence, you know, how does this move sit with your constituents? Is this the start of a, you know, a broader shift in how we handle military compensation in this term?
Well, I think this is a dividend, as he said. We were fortunate in passing a 3.8% increase in their pay just recently in the National Defense Authorization Act. In the fact that the last 2 years we've done that, so finally we are starting to see the military families be treated in a much better way, and I think that's going to continue. The president loves the military. We've seen it, such evidence of that. And I think this was just saying, hey, it's a special year. We're celebrating 250 years in this country, and let's give the military something special for Christmas.
Does that have to come through Congress, though, the checks, or can he just send the checks?
No, he can do that. He has resources that we give to the executive branch for all sorts of things, including the Pentagon and military resources. So those can be shifted in various ways, but he's taking those from additional funds that have come in from tariffs and using those in a profitable way. The amount of money that's been coming in for tariffs has been burning a hole in his pocket. He wants to use it in many ways, including for health care reform, giving people a chance to decide what health care they would determine to be best for them, as opposed to being stuck with the Unaffordable Care Act. So that's a whole issue going on right now as well. But I think the president wanted to highlight his support for the military. He's used them. He's used them very well and strongly this past 11 months. I guess it's been, seems like 4 years with so much happening. But I think that's why he wanted to speak last night. He certainly isn't hearing that in the national media, the good things, including talking about the border that was just totally broken and run over by illegal immigrants, but especially the criminal element of illegal immigrants that we're going after still to this day. And now it's completely shut down. Zero illegal crossings allowed in the last 7 months. And in Congress, we've been watching that and monitoring that, and it's absolutely true. So those things have added impact. And, of course, the economy, you know, we heard about the average Thanksgiving meal being less costly than the year before. But you don't hear too much of that in the national media. And I think the president finally decided enough's enough. We're going to talk about the successes, not only the one big beautiful bill, which, man, I'm looking forward to the impact of that coming up here. And after the first of the year when it takes effect, and people are already seeing, I had a guy on a telephone town hall the other night actually put out statistics that came from his tax attorney about what he is going to receive this coming year as a result of the tax cuts and the one big beautiful bill. So we're looking forward to that, but I think the president finally said, I'm going to have to talk about it. But it was only 19 minutes, which was surprising.
That was surprising. It wasn't 90 minutes, which is the usual. Question for you on health care. No new deal, no extension or anything. What's the plan in 2026 to tackle
this? Well, the plan is what we passed, and there will be more as well. We put through easy lifts, as we call it around here, bills that have gone through Congress before, didn't make muster in the Senate, but with the pressure on, we're hoping that will change. Bills like mine, mine was one of the highlights of that bill we passed yesterday, and that's the Association Health Plans. That would, at conservative estimates coming from the CBO, over 700 million people would go for that plan. 700,000 people would go for that plan because it gives them choice, because small businesses like unions and large corporations now could join together for economy of scale and offer a less costly, better benefit health plan for their employees in that association. And so that was one of the things put through. But the battle was over something that, I mean, the Democrats passed that supplemental for COVID relief. They put the three-year sunset date on. No Republican voted for that or was involved in putting the sunset on. And now they're trying to say, we've got to fix it because it's sunsetting, even though they're the ones who put the sunset in because they couldn't get the votes to make it permanent. And also have the funding they wanted to put for permanency to the Green New Deal and other rabid environmental things that they were doing. So in my debate on the floor yesterday and in the Rules Committee the night before, I tried to point out, listen, we've got a better plan, more choice, more opportunity for people to make decisions what fits best for them. And we're not committed to continuing that supplemental that most people don't hear about because the national media isn't talking about it. That it does not go to the person. It goes to the insurance companies. And the insurance companies, since the passage of the Affordable Care Act, which we've renamed the Unaffordable Care Act, revenues have increased for big insurance from $245 billion in 2010 to now $1.4 trillion in 2023. That's government-sized numbers, you know, when you talk about the trillions. And that's what we're trying to get a grasp on. So while the Democrats are saying that we are going to cause people's premiums to go up, they're going up anyway for the rest of the 347 million people in this company who are on the exchange and on the Unaffordable Care Act. Yeah. This is just a small component of them. We're talking about that supplement that came during COVID and was just supposed to be for COVID as well. So the battle will go on, and the next year we've got additional plans that we put in place. It'll take quite a debate.
All right, Congressman Tim Walberg, we always appreciate you coming on. We appreciate you. Have a great holiday if we don't speak to you again before then.
Yeah, you as well, and we'll look forward to speaking to you as soon as possible.
All right, more J.R. Morning coming up. One of the three killed in that deadly ambush attack in Syria from Macomb County.
7 o'clock hour. Good to have you this Thursday morning. Make sure you're listening at 8:49. We've got an opportunity for you to win some tickets to go see Josh Groban with Jennifer Hudson in concert all the way in June 25th at LCA. It is going to be a great show. You raise me up.
Oh, my.
All right.
It is one of my favorite. I don't do Josh Groban any good there. First of all, how dare you? Second of all, remember when Rich Rodriguez sang that to the Michigan football team at their like year-end banquet, and people caught that on camera? And
actually, I do not remember that, but that sounds like gold.
Do I gotta find that?
You might need to find it. Yeah. I mean, well, we don't need to play it on air, but it is fantastic. People are like, why is Rich Rodriguez singing Josh Groban right now? It was very strange.
The Rich Rod era was so short. Maybe that's why I forgot.
It was, yeah. It was, people wanted to forget it. So make sure you're listening. We'll give you an opportunity to hear the real Josh Groban.
The real.
Somebody with talent in June, 8:49. Donald Trump talked to the country last night, talked about affordability, talked about these military dividends that will be sent out to members of the military.
1,450,000 military service members will receive a special, we call Warrior Dividend before Christmas, a Warrior Dividend in honor of our nation's founding in 1776.
Said nobody knew about it till about 30 minutes before he took the air.
And Congressman Tim Walberg said, hey, you know, he doesn't need to come to Congress. He can.
Yeah, he's got the ability to do that.
He's got the ability to do that.
But, yeah, pretty interesting.
Yeah, he talked about a lot of things. And I don't think we have the bite on the prescription drug prices. But he said that, you know, he had that EO on prescription drug prices. And he will cut those prices by as much as 400, 500, even 600%. And I'm wondering if those math hawks out there were like, hold on, that's not how math
works. Don't look at me for that.
Are the prescription companies paying people to take their?
That would be a bad business model.
If you cut it by 100%, it's $0.
Yeah.
So these are the kinds of things that come out in these campaign rally-like speeches that are just not true.
But he talked about health care. He talked about, you know, doing away with these ACA subsidies.
And the Fed chair. He talked about
and the Fed chair, you know, wanting somebody more bullish on lowering the interest rate.
Uh-huh.
You know, all of that to say that it does feel like this was a moment for the president to say, we've done a lot. We've done a lot to help the country. Why isn't that resonating? Why isn't it clicking with voters to say, look what we did at the border. Look what we did with your tax cuts. Look. And he doesn't feel, in my mind, my 5,000 foot view, it just feels like he's wondering why the things that he's done, the things that he talked about doing during the campaign, that why is it that continuing to trend now, year later?
And doing a presidential address also gives him more audience as well to get his point across, as opposed to maybe being in a silo where you have one network who will show up and then everybody else.
Yeah.
So, you know, you had a larger audience pool.
Mm-hmm. Yep, certainly.
I mean, usually these presidential addresses are like to announce something like we got Osama bin Laden, you know what I mean, or something. And so, I mean, he does things his own way, and he likes to tout what he did, and he did that last night.
A Macomb County man who once served as an interpreter for the U.S. Army in Iraq is being remembered after he was killed in a deadly ambush attack in Syria. The Pentagon says two U.S. Army soldiers and a civilian interpreter were killed Saturday, December 13th. The interpreter, identified as Ayad Mansour Sukat of Macomb Township, Governor Gretchen Whitmer called Sukat a brave Michigander, saying he served the country with honor and courage. Congresswoman Lisa McClain also offered condolences, thanking those who served alongside U.S. forces overseas. And Sukat's family says he worked as an interpreter during the Iraqi invasion. And from 2003 to 2007, the service that later allowed his family to immigrate to the United States, they say serving America was in his blood. The injured from the attack were flown to a U.S. garrison near the Iraq-Jordan border. So he gave his life, you know, the ultimate sacrifice. And, you know, our hearts go out to his family and the family of the other soldiers that were killed, too, in that ambush in Syria.
Yeah, certainly.
And Trump saying there's going to be retaliation for this. We haven't seen what that means quite yet. Mm-hmm. Just like on a lighter note here, Tom Izzo had his Christmas show with his players, and he took the accordion and went to town.
Voice open, say,
didn't know he played the accordion.
Yeah. Well, I pulled it because we're going to talk to him tomorrow, and I wanted him to hear that. So, Jason, let's keep it for tomorrow. I forgot it was Thursday. But, yeah, I mean, he talked about these moments are special with his team, and you got to do light things within this tough grind of a season.
He does the same thing every year, doesn't he, at that party?
Yeah, he's got that Christmas show, and he loves it.
I mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
They beat up on Toledo the other night. They got Oakland. What is that, Saturday? Saturday at LCA?
Saturday, yes.
Yep, you'll hear it here on WJR. It's a 12 o'clock tip. But the Spartans look pretty good. They look pretty,
pretty good.
Top 10 team. Tom Izzo's got this thing on the right track, like he always does. 7:12 time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. Young people are facing a really tough job market these days, to be sure. However, in spite of the tough sledding to get and keep a job these days, as CNBC reports, there's some good news on the horizon for 2026, as new grads with up to 4 years of work experience are expected to see stronger wage growth next year, according to Glassdoor Research. Now, this wage growth, while generally national in nature, is different from market to market. Cities on the rise are projected to offer the biggest growth in wages, all while offering a lower cost of living, Glassdoor Research notes. So what are the hottest sectors based on wage growth for young workers as we head into 2026? Well, healthcare jobs are the most in-demand roles with rising pay for young workers, Glassdoor lead researcher Chris Martin told CNBC Make It. Another hot sector, private education jobs. Overall, healthcare, along with those private education jobs, have propped up the economy for some time. They make up about 17% of the jobs nationally, but accounted for 56% of job growth between July 2023 and July 2025. That, according to Indeed analysis of Bureau and Labor Statistics data. Other hot job sectors include customer services and support roles. And while those sectors are hot, some cities are projected to offer rising wages across the income spectrum. And here are those top 10 cities for early career wage growth, according to Glassdoor Research. At number 10, it's Tucson, Arizona. Number 9, Richmond, Virginia. At number 8, Denver, Colorado. Then at 7, Rochester, New York. Next, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Then the top 5, Austin, Texas at 5. Charleston, South Carolina at 4, Orlando, Florida at 3, Boise, Idaho at 2, and Provo, Utah comes in number 1 for projected job wage growth in 2026. So there you have it. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, the source for everything you need to start and grow your own business. And that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
Well, the holidays are a wonderful time spent with friends and family, but there probably are some touch points that you get in these times. You know, yes. Are you going to talk about politics at the dinner table? Can this person stay over? What kind of gifts are you getting? There are all kinds of things that can happen in the holiday season, and who better to walk us through this than Dr. Steve Craig from Craig Counseling Services. Dr. Craig, what do we do?
You should talk about every subject the whole time at family gatherings. Everything's
right.
Open.
Right. Just break the ice right away.
Yeah, right. Go right at it. All right. This is one for that. Dr. Steve, I'm newly engaged and struggling with my fiance and her family. Now that we're engaged, her mother has invited my family to all their holiday events. She invited them for Thanksgiving and was offended that they didn't take her up on it. And when we left her house on Thanksgiving to go to my mother's house for the second dinner, she made snarky remarks to my fiance, her daughter, that this wasn't right. Now that Christmas is here, her mom has a big dinner every Christmas Eve, and then everyone, all her three sisters, come over at noon on Christmas Day, and everyone is supposed to be there. But we are planning on going to my family on Christmas Day. Last week, my fiance had lunch with her mom to tell her this, and then came home in tears, wondering why my family was so unwilling to be part of the family. And maybe we shouldn't even get married if we were going to be like that. Apparently, her mother feels her invites are rejected and feels like we are making my family a priority and wrecking their long-held traditions. My aunt fiancé told me that I needed to appreciate all her mother does and how important these things are for her and that my family was isolating themselves. What do I do? This should be bolded. What do I do here? If I agree to this, I will be blowing off my mom. But if I don't, I'm starting out on a terrible foot with my new in-laws. Chris is smirking like he's been there before.
This is a no-brainer. This is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
The problem here lies with his soon-to-be mother-in-law. It's a wonderful thing to extend an invitation. It's a wonderful thing to be able to have a special time with your future in-laws or your family, and getting everybody together is a wonderful thing. But that wanting or be willing to invite them to a special dinner like Christmas dinner nullifies everything that they have going on and all of their family traditions. And I don't see how there is any correlation of we don't like your family, or they don't like us, or all of a sudden we're starting off our marriage on a bad foot. Do this on a normal Tuesday. Have them over for dinner and a glass of wine on a Wednesday. You don't need to do this on a major holiday for the first time and disregard everybody else's traditions.
Okay, wait, hold on. So then, I'm gonna challenge Chris.
Okay. Right?
So what do they do then? Because now you're this young guy, his mm-hmm. wife is saying this, and it's about her mother.
Mm-hmm.
So now, I mean, because I agree with everything you said. Now, what are you going to say?
Here's what you say. You go,
she's terrible.
No. You go, look, I would love to get everybody together, and I think we should do that. And my parents have nothing against your parents. They have their traditions on the holidays that they also want us to be a part of
mm-hmm.
that maybe are not the same as yours. So let's do this a different day. Let's do it for New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. Let's do it for another thing that we can get everybody together and have a nice time and enjoy each other's company.
But right. My mom
Chris is sleeping on. Chris is sleeping on the couch.
I'll die on that hill. I got no problem with that.
He's on the couch. What are you doing?
She's gonna say my mom doesn't want to do it on those days. She wants to do it on the days she's been doing.
Well, then you throw balls back in her court.
Well, to me, it's sit down and talk and compromise. I mean, you know, for me, my mother-in-law have, you know, certain things going on Christmas and New Year's Day. My family had certain things, and we compromised. We ended up at one place one half of the day and went to the other place the other half, and we would switch it. The next holiday, you know, we go over this person's house this part of the day, and we go over to my family's house part of the day. We sat down and talked about it and had some communication. That's what I would do, and that's what I've done, and that's what we've been doing. So,
I feel like this is a tale as old as time. Like the young couple forms, and now you try and blend all the families together. But the young couple has to create their own traditions.
They
decide what they need for their family, and they move forward. If they say to one mother, we're not doing it this way, that's okay.
Yes.
If they say, now we're hosting at our house, that's okay too.
Yes.
But they're the new couple forging a new life.
And right, and that's what we'll talk about. But then the problem lies in the couple has to understand that that's their job, but the in-laws on both sides have to really understand that too, because then if they don't, they're putting undue pressure on this couple.
Yes.
So it really starts with the in-laws. Because the way
wait till they have kids too.
I know, right? Right.
No. Everybody wants to have those special connections with you
right.
around a special time of year.
Yeah,
it's very normal.
But that's why it's so important right now for this couple to understand that when you're getting married, you're not just building this life together. And I love you, and you love me, and whatever. Is that you are now building boundaries around the family that you're creating. And if you don't do that, you have to recognize that you have to do that just as much as everything else right here and right now, because there's like family A and family C, but you're creating B.
Yes.
And if you don't start putting boundaries around that, you're doing too much of A or too much of C. And so you guys have to defend that and understand that's your job. And the families often don't. There's so many times that I had a family in my office a few months ago where they loved that their daughter was – or their son was marrying this woman and she was a different religion. I forget, let's say that they were Catholic and they were Jewish and he was Catholic.
Okay.
And they're like, we love him, he's great, everything's fine, whatever. Okay, but you realize that the kids might not be bar mitzvahed and they might not be whatever. And they freaked out. Oh, no, that's not happening. I mean, he can marry in here, but we're still going to do everything that our family does.
Uh-huh.
They're going to come to, no, that's going to be a problem. And so when I have people in my office who are getting married, they'll often say, well, we're in love and that's why we're getting married. I'm like, are you ready to actually, do you understand you have to build a family and to do traditional stuff? Like if your daughter's boyfriend comes and asks for your hand in marriage, you're not just it's not just saying, I want to now be part of your family and all your traditions. You're saying, we're going to build our own.
Sure.
Are you supporting that she now can go have her own family? Or are you thinking, great, you come and do all of our stuff? Huge pressures for the holidays and for young couples when the in-laws don't understand that.
Well, also in this scenario, does the fiancé woman understand it too?
Right. She got lost in her mom there when she went to lunch because then she's not actually being strong enough to say, Mom, and it's her job.
Yes.
She can't have the fiancé say, here's how we're going to do it now.
No.
Right.
That's a problem. So she's got to go to her mom and say, we need to build our own traditions. So she needs to be strong enough to build that bond, that family bee that they're creating. And that's really what's hard is that mom doesn't get it, so she's got to break that with mom. Hard, really hard.
Well, we're so close to Christmas. If people haven't done that yet, next year they're going to do it. They're going to build a boundary.
That's exactly right. Already set for now. We're going to do it next year.
Avoid it till December 20th next year.
Thank you, Dr. Steve. I know these are issues a lot of families are facing, and we appreciate it.
Good to see you guys. Have a good holiday.
You Craig too.
Counseling Services in Bloomfield Hills. More to come on JR Morning.
I am a much worse offender when it comes to getting gifts for the kids.
Are you?
It's bad.
You're not done?
No, yet? Look, I can admit my faults. And that is certainly one of them. Because I tend to live vicariously through these kids.
Yeah, I've done that.
It's a problem. Because, you know, you think about it. I mean, like, we went and saw Santa last night, right?
Uh-huh.
There was like three things that they asked for. We got them a lot more than three things. And it's like, I do this and I get caught up in it. Whether it's Christmas or their birthdays, whatever it is, I get caught up in it.
Uh-huh. Like those gym shoes?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. Like I could just go buy you shoes from Walmart.
Right.
And pay $15.
Uh-huh.
But that's not how I roll. And my wife's like, what are you doing? He's going to wear them for like a week and he's going to grow out of them. And she's right. It's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. But then like around Christmas, like if they ask for an action figure or they ask for something.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what? You can't just have one Ninja Turtle.
Just get the whole set.
There's
right?
four of them.
Yeah.
Like, why would we just get one? That doesn't make any sense. Uh-huh. But they're not asking for all four.
Uh-huh. No.
That's just my stupid brain going like, well, when you were a kid, you would have really liked all four.
I did
you know what
the
I mean?
Same thing, man, with the boys with the wrestling figures.
Yeah.
You know, I got them like the whole pack, and then I got them the ring that talked. And they didn't ask for that, but I.
They didn't know it existed.
That's kind of nice. I think I like that.
Cutscene. Lloyd is just playing off the top rope.
Oh, I'm playing. Man.
Yeah, of course.
I gotta test it out. Make sure it works.
I don't. You don't strike me, Jamie, as that. You
like.
I feel like
toys.
You have control.
Yeah.
Of the amount of
of
gifts?
Like you and Olivia and like
the things you like as opposed to
yeah. I think that.
Oh, I've been getting the things that she likes. Yeah. I think it's gonna morph into things that I like too.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
oh,
she's
yeah.
already showing signs that she wants to get her nails done. I mean, ooh, we could do that together soon.
Yes.
And I used to be a huge Barbie fan.
Okay.
And she's really into Barbies right now.
All right. So that's where it's going to come.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where it's going to come.
She's going to have all the sweet Barbies, man. All the hooked up Barbies.
She kind of has a lot of sweet Barbies already.
Does
yes.
she?
Yeah.
But it's fun. Look, at the end of the day, it's like you hope, like my hope deep down is like they're going to remember and go like, oh, my gosh, Dad, I remember when you got all the Ninja Turtles. Like, that was awesome.
My kids
like,
do
maybe
it now.
Not so much in the moment. Yeah, yeah right. See, that's what
and
I look
they're
forward
old,
to.
They're 37 and 31, and but they still, Dad, remember, man, when we went to this or you
yeah.
bought. Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
that's, cool.
that's the hope.
Don't you think, though, your kids are grown,
yeah,
Lloyd,
yeah.
them bringing up experiences and not the stuff, though? Like, do they say, I remember spending time with you, or do they say, I remember that toy you got me?
Both. And you know, they remember where we were and spending time over my mom's house, you know, and to the point where my son, you know, of course, somebody else has my mom's house now, but my son says, you know, Dad, I'm going to make enough money and I'm going to buy that house back because we had a lot of memories in that house
that's cool.
I want to go back in that house again.
That's great.
I want to meet it, you know? So those kind of things, man.
Yeah, we get a lot of that too. It's a lot of the experiences. And it's stuff that I don't even remember. I don't even know that they remember.
Me too.
That's the crazy part.
Right.
That's the crazy part. And they can be pretty innocuous. Like, you know, we'll go to a Red Wings game and that's a lot of fun and they really like that. But then it's like, remember when we got the tree from that you know, tree lot. Uh-huh. And it was like, yeah, that was really cool. He's like, it was snowing. And it's like, yeah. So, like, it's cool to go to Monster Jam, and it's cool to, like, see all these things that, you that again, are going to be memories. But
yeah, some
it's,
memories,
some it's the smaller stuff.
Some memories, like, cool. When your kids say, Dad, remember when we pledged the steps and you fell?
Yeah.
I do remember that. I don't want to. I think that's why my back is bad now. Yeah, they just cleaned the house. They were cleaning, and the wood steps look so nice and shiny. And I said, oh, you guys did a good job. I had on socks.
Yeah.
Slip right down. No. And boom, 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 get into the car. We were on our way to Paul W's St. Patrick's Day party. They were in the car with me. And he's like, Dad, we put pledge on the steps. That's why you fell. And all I could do was laugh.
Well, sure.
Because they didn't. No. They thought they were cleaning.
Right. Yeah. Right. You cannot be mad about
I
that.
I can't.
Now
but
you
I
can be mad
pain,
when you're you know, 6-7 disc slips or whatever.
Right.
I don't know if that's a real disc. I just made that up. But yeah,
6-7.
The injury.
You just gotta go there, right?
Yeah.
Switching gears, Cade Cunningham had his jersey retired by James Bowie High School in Arlington, Texas. And this was last night. His teachers described him as a kind of joyful student, a grounded human being who became a superstar and never forgot where he came from.
Cool.
And there's some really nice pictures here via Johnny Cain's Twitter. And, you know, his number 2's up in the rafters there. The entire Pistons team went to this high school to support Cade Cunningham.
Oh, see.
That
yeah.
is cool.
Now, see, that's why they're doing so well.
Right.
Because they're... Yeah,
not just a couple guys. They're all there for this jersey retirement.
That is
like,
sweet.
How about that?
That's good stuff.
I think that's great.
I think
it shows that there's some
cool.
real chemistry on this.
Yes.
Team.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
That's very cool. That's very cool. How about this? You know, obviously, this isn't breaking news, but artificial Christmas trees safer than real Christmas trees. And I have the real tree.
Okay.
You have the real tree.
Mm-hmm.
You have...
I have both.
You have both.
Yeah.
Do you forget to water the tree?
Sometimes I do.
Like, we went... like
Well, Marie doesn't. I do. And we left it to me.
I'm
like, it would be dead. And
have you watered the tree lately? And I'm like, no. She's like, have you? And no. And I'm like, oh, we got to put water in this thing. Because fire officials are like, you got to make sure that you're keeping this tree...
Yeah.
...as alive as possible.
Yes.
Because... And some of the folks that don't have the newer light strands on their trees, they're like, you gotta be careful with some of these older strands. They could catch things on fire.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they're sometimes by an outlet. Like, you gotta be careful.
Yeah.
These things will just, and then that's where a lot of the problems come in.
Sometimes your uncle is lighting his cigar in the living room and the whole thing goes up in
just,
flames.
I mean, you're just down to the stump at that point.
Yeah.
I give you the Griswold family Christmas tree.
Exactly.
Jason's on fire today.
Isn't he though?
Jason's on fire. He's looking forward to Christmas. He's ready to go.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's on fire today. Do you have a go-to
ho, ho, ho!
Christmas movie? Like what's the one?
Christmas Vacation,
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
The Grinch.
The Grinch. Like
with
the
Jim
OG.
Carrey.
Oh, Jim Carrey. Okay.
Jim Carrey, man. What in the world should I wear?
Yeah,
he loves that part.
Here's another thing I've noticed, because we don't watch like live TV very much anymore.
Okay.
But like now, like ABC will play like Santa Claus, or they'll Elf will be on or whatever.
Yeah.
It is kind of fun to watch a movie on TV. It's crazy.
You like the commercials?
It's a different vibe. You're like, oh yeah, I need to go to Starbucks and try that. Or I don't know what it is. It's a little different, but I have found that it's enjoyable this time of year. But, like, I'm a Christmas Vacation, Home Alone.
Yeah, hey, I watched two really good Christmas movies yesterday. Die Hard 1 and 2.
But now, you really
Christmas
call those
movies.
Christmas movies, though?
This guy.
I forgot the second one is based on Christmas Eve as well.
He just lit
total
the match
Christmas
and
movie.
Walked away. This
Jason,
guy.
That's a disgrace.
It's not a Christmas movie. I don't think. I just think it's...
There are Christmas songs in it. It is on Christmas.
Okay, but if it was...
See, Christmas doesn't always have to be a Lifetime movie or a comedy.
Okay, fair enough. But if it was on July 4th, would the plot be any different?
They wouldn't mention anything about Christmas.
Just because they mention Christmas doesn't make it a Christmas movie.
If it was on the 4th of July, it would be an Independence Day movie.
That's right. Yeah, okay, fair enough. But I don't.
You're not going for that? No.
Okay. You've heard Food First Michigan here on WJR for a lot of years talking about food insecurity and connecting those who need it to the nutritious food that you need to fuel your bodies. Well, that show here on WJR, changing a little bit. Still focusing on Michigan, but they're taking a national approach. We're going to talk to Jerry Brisson next here on JR Morning. Well, we talk a lot about food insecurity here. There are so many wonderful organizations that are trying to address that need and fill that void for people that don't have access to good, healthy, clean food. And of course, here on WJR, Food First Michigan has been a staple for a long time in drawing attention to this issue here in Michigan. Well, there is a vacuum still, because while the conversation has changed here in the Mitten, it hasn't quite caught on in other states. And that's where the folks at Food First Michigan are trying to make a difference at a much larger scale. And to talk about it is the co-host of Food First Michigan, Jerry Brisson. It's good to see you.
Great to see you, too. You know, it's like being with the family, I have to admit.
Exactly.
You are absolutely family.
Family that you want to see.
Well, that's right. We don't need the you know, Dr. Chris to talk about this. Yeah. We're all good.
Exactly right.
Dr. Craig, but you are so close. Sorry, my mistake.
I thought you were just inflating me up a little bit. All right, that's okay.
I should have gone with that. I missed it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about First Food First Michigan. Hear it here on WJR on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock. What has been the driving force for this show for so many years?
Yes. Well, Dr. Phil Knight is the driving force. So let's just start with, he's an amazing guy. He runs the Food Bank Council of Michigan. Everyone who meets Dr. Phil loves him, and there's a reason
for it,
right?
Yeah.
And so relationships is what Food First Michigan is built on. It. And really, there's a lot of people who want to argue about everything. But if you want to solve a problem like food insecurity, you've got to do a fair amount of listening. And you've got to listen to the people who've made a commitment to this issue from whatever perspective they're coming from. They've made a commitment. They're working on it. Now let's listen to why. What made this important to you? Mm-hmm. Food First Michigan brought those people to the table and gave them a chance to talk about their story, you know? So every guest tells a little bit about how they got where they are. They talk a little bit about what made food security important to them, and then a little bit about what are they doing now, right? So it's a format that really lets you get to know the people who've made a commitment to this. And we've had obviously hundreds of guests over the 9 years that we've done the show. We won a few awards, I want to just say.
Of course you did. Well deserved.
And so, you know, it's been a great journey of meeting people, letting our listeners meet them and really get to understand this from a lot of different perspectives, because we do believe you have to, if you're going to solve a problem like this, you've got to broaden your perspective.
You've got to understand the problem first.
And no one has all the answers.
Right.
And you got to have collaboration over these silos a lot of times, too. I mean, because you brought together government, nonprofits, and healthcare and industry. So why does hunger demand that kind of all hands on?
Because it's so many people. I mean, the bottom line, and here's the thing, you can't solve it once. There are new problems every generation, mm-hmm. right? So the problems of the last generation have changed, and there's new problems now. So what worked before works differently now. I'll give you one huge example. When we started in food banking 50 years ago, most of the food was coming from food manufacturing, like Tyson, places that were creating food products.
Yes.
All those products go to other sources now. They've learned how to sell those products to dollar stores and secondary markets. And so all that food that used to fuel, if you will, food banks and the people we serve is gone. We had to completely change the way we source food. Okay, that's a new problem, right? Now, that's just one example. If you look at, I'll tell you what's going to happen with food and climate? Not trying to make an issue of it at this show right now, but it will. There will be changes that have to be made in the food supply chain because of that. That's new to our generation. Do I have the answers on climate? That's a different show.
Yeah, sure, right.
You have the answers, great. Yeah.
But the bottom line is every generation has new problems that have to be addressed. So some things stay the same, though. If you don't feed children, they don't do as well. Children have to be well-nourished, and you can't take your eye off the ball. So when you look at the food kids are getting in the classroom, is it the best food for them? Are they getting it in the right variety and quantity and things that really make them healthy? Those are things we've got to be focused on, no matter what other problems there are.
Sure.
So bringing the people in to talk about it, the people who are working on these feet-on-the-ground issues every day, who've made a life commitment to, this is why we think this is important. You get to go, okay, we got to think about the role of food security and employment, the role of food security, and we talked about education, the role of food security and health, even the role of food security and how it's affected by all the other government programs that help people. Mm-hmm. All that's got to be put together.
Sure.
And if you don't put it together, you're going to have people over here doing this and people over here doing that, and you'll never come up with an answer or a better answer.
So you're taking this national.
That's our goal.
This is a, you know, issue that affects everybody.
Correct.
And you guys are the only ones talking about it in this way.
I think that's right. I mean, you know, now there's probably somebody out there going, I've got a podcast. I mean, you know, there's a million of them. But I will say this. We have had and continue to have a great track record here in Michigan of getting the highest level government people, the highest level corporate people, the highest level education people. I think that we've had a unique ability to attract people who are influencers and real influencers, people that have a say over hundreds of millions of dollars worth of effort, who are at the table giving their point of view and saying, this is what I think we have to do. And when you follow that up with the other relationship building, like that happens at the Mackinac Policy Conference and some of the other things we go to, you start to build synergy. And as a result, the Food Bank Council of Michigan is doing 10 times as much as it was when we started doing the show. Mm. And that's because people support the work because they understand it better.
So it's Food Secure Nation.
Correct.
How do you take what you're doing now and then scale it to a much, much larger audience?
Well, the short answer is we start to add radio stations across the country. So we're reestablishing here at WJR. This is our headquarters and the you know, sort of our home where the whole thing starts. And then over the course of the next year, we will be adding radio stations as we can get sponsors. Obviously, we got to get sponsors and people that want to pay for it.
But then building those relationships in those states, in those communities
exactly
is going to be
huge. Working with the food banks and the state associations and the education people, the people that really want to see this solved, and getting them to support the conversation.
And then making others aware. Right. Well, here's what they did in Michigan. That
right.
Worked.
Exactly.
Maybe we should look at that.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Exactly right.
Yeah.
And you gave over the reins at Gleaners.
I did, yeah. So after 20 years, right? And Angela Maloney is my successor. She's the CEO of the Catholic Foundation of Michigan. Really, really great person. I've known her for a while. We've met several times, and she's gonna do a great job at Gleaners. I will say this though, just a quick thing. Leaders have to change. You no matter how good you are, you have got to let other people lead, because you will be perpetuating your own mistakes if you're not careful, you know. So I do. I think it was the right time. I think Leaners is healthy, and Angela's going to do a great job.
It's Food Secure Nation. You and Dr. Phil Knight will continue to do a great job as well. Jerry Brisson, thank you so much.
Thanks, Chris.
Have
or
a
Dr.
Christmas.
Chris.
That's right. Don't get it twisted. We'll take a break. More next on JR Morning. All right, 8 o'clock hour. Make sure you're listening at 8:49. Give you an opportunity to win some tickets to go see Josh Groban and Jennifer Hudson in concert at Little Caesars Arena June 25th. So that's coming up for you towards the end of the show. Meanwhile, Donald Trump spoke last night. Talked about a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Talked about affordability, immigration. Talked about health care. And he also talked about this warrior dividend, $1,776 going to more than a million active troops of the U.S. military.
1,450,000 military service members will receive a special, we call, warrior dividend before Christmas, a warrior dividend in honor of our nation's founding in 1776.
So that was there. He also talked about the cost of housing. He says he's going to unveil something in 2026 that would help bring the costs of owning a home down.
In the new year, I will announce some of the most aggressive housing reform plans in American history.
So that's there. I'm curious to know what you guys think of what last night was.
I kind of looked at it almost as a rally more than a speech, you know, from the White House, because he was a little defiant, seems like he, you know, and he was just going, he was just nonstop, just back to back to back to back. And, you know, I just thought he was trying to let the people know, listen, I've done all these great things and my numbers should be better, and they're not. So I need to let you know everything we've done and put that in front of you. And I think that's what it sounded like to me.
Yeah, you know, these presidential addresses are usually like, we got Osama bin Laden, or we're going to do this, you know, with this certain country. It's not usually like, here's all the things I've done. I did think maybe it would be like a Christmas address. He said Merry Christmas at the end.
Yeah.
But it felt like a rally to me, and the same old things coming up over and over and over. And this prescription drug thing. Okay, he did do a good thing. He's trying to lower prices. Yes. But then for me, it goes off topic when he says that he's cutting prices by as much as 400, 500, even 600%. Those figures are mathematically impossible. So it's like the details here. I'm like, what are we doing?
I think it was an opportunity for him to force the news networks into carrying this. It's a official address to the nation.
Yeah.
It's not like CNN was going to
like he was having
not
a rally,
carry that.
And then, you know.
They're going to carry those.
Right.
So he forced this to be carried, and he put this message out there of, I'm doing these things. You should see that I'm doing these things and understand that some of this might not be as instantaneous as he thought, but that there are things, the gears are churning, that yes, we are seeing lower gas prices. Yes, we are seeing some prices come down on certain segments of our economy, but not all corners.
Well, the inflation's exactly the same as when he took office. Yes.
Correct.
At 3%.
Yes.
Prices, people are feeling them in the grocery store. They're still there. So people are feeling it still.
Absolutely.
And it felt a little bit like, no, here's what I say it is. When people are like, no, here's what I'm paying at the grocery store.
Well, it almost felt like, too, he was trying to reestablish control of that narrative of, we are going to bring the cost down. Our platform in 24 was, yes, it was on immigration. Yes, it was. It was also on affordability. It was, you're paying too much. Your eggs are too much.
Yes.
Everything is too expensive, and we're going to bring that down because inflation was so high under the Biden administration. So it almost felt like, instead of the position he had taken a couple of weeks ago, which was affordability is a Democratic hoax, that we need to reestablish ourselves, our party, as the one that is going to tackle this issue for the American people and take some of that power away from the Democrats. We'll see if that works, but that was my vibe on it last night.
Well, and how long will it take now to stop talking about the previous administration? We're like 11 months in. So, you know, do we just continue to talk about the previous administration when things go bad next year or the year after? Do we still, you know, when is it my plate? This is my administration, and I'm the, you know, the be-all, end-all. Buck stops with me.
Well, it certainly seems like it's going to go on and on and on, because they're even changing, or they're putting plaques under all those pictures at the White House and like trolling Biden and Obama. Right. Like, why? It's not presidential.
No,
I agree. I also don't think that there are very many presidents in modern history that are going to look at something and go, yeah, I screwed that up. I would love that. I would love that accountability. I just don't think that that's the norm.
Well, federal prosecutors are stepping up efforts to collect more than $800,000 in restitution from the former mayor, Quavon Kilpatrick. We talked about this. This is an update on that story. Court records showing prosecutors have filed multiple new asset requests targeting banks, credit unions, insurance companies, and retirement systems as they search for money that could help satisfy Kilpatrick's outstanding debt to taxpayers. Among institutions listed are Comerica Bank, Navy Federal Credit Union, the Michigan Legislative Retirement System, and several others. Kilpatrick, as you know, was convicted of 24 federal felonies in Detroit's largest corruption scandal, including racketeering and fraud, extortion, and perjury. Although his prison sentence was commuted in 2021, his convictions and restitution obligations remain. The renewed push follows the recent death of his mother, former Congresswoman Carolyn Teeks Kilpatrick, as prosecutors examine whether any assets could be used to pay what he still owes. And I know the mayor was on our show last week, and he talked about how the judge had seized assets from Bobby Ferguson, and supposedly that those assets were supposed to be applied joint and severally to both of their restitutions, and he said really his should be gone at this time.
Just asking the court, really asking Judge Edmonds to do what she said according to the order that she had in September 2017 to apply liquidated assets, to apply any cash payments to both of their restitution, joint and severally, so we can, and mine would be absolutely done.
So he says his should be done if she did what she said she was going to do by applying those assets, but we'll see. And his mother passed away, and she has pensions and things. They say they don't think he can get the pensions, but if she has life insurance and he's a beneficiary, that money goes to him, they can get that, and they're going to try to go after that.
I mean, he made it clear that he thinks he should be done. I don't think the government agrees.
No, not at all.
Let's talk about the Lions. They need to win. They need to win out. And it starts with the Steelers on Sunday. The last time they won two games in a row, do you guys know when that was?
Lost two games in a row?
Won two games in a row.
Oh, this year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
When they were, it was like a four-game win streak?
October was the last time they were able to string some wins together. And Jared Goff seems a little bothered by this question, but it's a true question. I mean, they have to win back-to-back games. Started with, you know, the last three games here, and he was asked about that.
Are you in a similar mindset knowing what this team has around with three games left in this regular season?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think, yeah, if we want to stop getting that question, we got to start string some together. So, we got to bounce back this week and then string them together.
That was my pal Brad Galley asking that question to Goff. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, you have to, or the playoffs idea is done.
Well, on every broadcast, every time they're playing a game after coming off a loss, it's talked about.
Oh, it is.
In every broadcast.
Yep.
Lions well, they talk about how they don't lose two games in a row. I don't care about that. We need to win two games in a row.
Well, they better start this weekend.
So if they win, if they win all three, they went out. Do they still need help, or are they in?
Yes.
They still need help.
Okay.
But if you have 11 wins, you're looking pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
You have to beat the Bears at the Bears.
Yes. And they look way better now than they did earlier in the season.
And it's going to be cold.
And it's going to be cold, yeah.
So coming up next, I've been talking to you about this trip to Italy, which is very exciting, but maybe you have plans to travel in the new year. What are the latest trends? When should you book? We'll talk to our travel expert at 8:19. Shelby Mechanical, with the holidays around the corner, your home works overtime, from big family dinners to out-of-town guests. And the last thing you need is a plumbing problem slowing the celebration. That's why Shelby Mechanical is my preferred plumber for the holiday season and trusted by WJR's Inside Outside Guys. For decades, families have trusted Shelby Mechanical for reliable, honest, and fast plumbing service, the kind you need when every moment matters. And to make your holidays even brighter, they're offering a special seasonal savings. $150 off sewer repair, $50 off snake or camera service, $25 off any faucet install. Whether it's a clogged drain, sewer issue, or faucet upgrade before the guests arrive, Shelby Mechanical has you covered. So keep your home comfortable, your gathering stress-free, and your plumbing in perfect working order. Call Shelby Mechanical, the plumbers you can count on this holiday season and all year long. I've really been enjoying this Christmas music, these lead-ins all morning long. It gets me in the holiday spirit. And you know what's a great gift? Travel for the holiday season for the person who has everything. Let's bring in Joseph DeFranco, Director of Leisure Travel at Corporate Travel. How are you, Joe?
I'm good, Jamie. Good morning to you and to Lloyd and to Chris.
Good morning to you. So I've been talking about this Italy vacation for a while. Let's start there. It's really the ultimate European vacation for 2026, and it's like a place that a lot of people don't think of or go to when they go to Italy.
It's true. People do think of Italy. It's still the number one destination, has been for, you know, literally decades. But Puglia, where we're going to be going, is still somewhat undiscovered. And it's an incredible place because their infrastructure for tourism is really quite developed, but people don't know the secret yet. But we do. It's in the southern, the very southeast part of Italy. It's the heel of the boot, if you will. They've got their own language, their own culture, their own food, their own architecture, and we're going to immerse ourselves in it. It's going to be awesome.
Speaking of food, Chef Michelle Bomarito's coming. John Filone of Cantoro, that amazing Italian market and trattoria, they're coming. So it's really food-focused.
It is. It's intended to be. It's intentionally a culinary tour. And Chef Michelle Bomarito, who you mentioned, is quite a name in Detroit and throughout the Midwest and the country. And she's going to be bringing not only her knowledge and expertise and interests to share with us, with the other travelers, but actually her craft. So she's going to be leading one of the cooking classes that we're going to experience there in Italy. But when you and I were talking recently about this, Jamie, one of the things I mentioned then, and I'll mention again, is that this is not specifically a tour for students of the culinary arts. This is a tour just for people who love good food, good wine, and maybe want to dabble with some learnings, a few things that they can take home and share and brag about to their friends. But yeah, it's going to be very immersive in the culinary arts with experiential meals too. So not just sitting down and having good food, but experiencing and learning about where does it come from, how is it sourced, how does the Caciocavallo cheese of Puglia differ from other burratas that you'll find in the north. So it's really going to not only, you know, please our tummies, but I think people are going to really learn a lot on this trip.
Good news. I think a lot of people like to eat good food and drink good wine. So I think this might be the trip for everybody. So if you want to come with us on this trip, it's in October. It's October 10th through the 15th. And you would call Exceptional Journeys at 1-855-305-8982. Now, Joe is also an expert of all things travel. And, you know, people want to go all over the world and they call your company to do that. Besides Italy, where are people heading?
Western Europe, well, all over the world is the truthful answer, Jamie. What we're hearing a lot of the requests we're getting now, and by the way, we're getting a lot of requests now because 'tis the season, which is, you know, that was your lead in and very appropriately so. We're getting a lot of requests right now for folks who are looking for gifts for parents, aunts and uncles, maybe even just, you know, themselves when they've got all the stuff they need and they just want to experience things. So what we're getting right now is a lot of requests for two things, I would say, if you were to split them. One is Western Europe still, because people are looking toward the summer, and Western Europe is always so very popular in the summer. But those that are looking a little bit more, you know, for travel more sooner travel, they're looking for destinations you might expect that are warmer. So definitely the Caribbean, the South Caribbean, East Caribbean in particular. Western Caribbean can get a little choppy if it's a cruise, you know, in January and February, but to escape the cold, people are looking south, and Mexico is still very much open. And then Central America has really come online in the last couple years, with places like Panama, even Honduras, which 10 years ago, I don't think very many people visited at all, but there are these resorts popping up. So there's a lot to do.
And we talk about with your company, you can have an idea and call your company and you will bring it to life. Or you could just call and say, what ideas do you have? And you can do both of those things. All right, last question. Do you have a travel hack? I mean, you travel all the time, all over the world. Give people something to take away because they're about to travel for the holidays.
Ooh, interesting. There are many. I hadn't thought this through, but I do.
I know, I put you on the spot.
That's okay. That's why I'm here. So what I like to do is when heading east, so let's call it Europe, when heading anywhere toward the east, try to find a later flight, one that leaves at 9 or 10 p.m., which, by the way, is common. They don't start until 4 or 5 p.m. scheduling, and I like to fly out as late as I can because you can catch more sleep on the plane out there versus only getting 2 hours if you leave at 4 p.m., and then you wake up or you arrive tired. So instead, to avoid that, get as much sleep as you can, leave later in the evening. You don't miss anything. You'll just get more sleep.
I love that. That's a sleep hack / travel hack from Joe DeFranco, Director of Leisure Travel at Corporate Travel. And again, their number is 1-855-305-8982. I hope a lot of people come with us to Italy in October. Joe, thank you.
Thank you. See you there.
See you there. Ciao. I'm very excited about the trip, but this guy's an expert in all things travel. So even if you're going somewhere else, I'd give him a call.
Yeah, you're going to love it. It's a wonderful region. I do try to do a lot of shopping still in person. I don't know. I just like it. It's convenient to go online.
Especially
and buy
with clothes,
things.
Too. Especially with clothes. Yeah. Because, you know, you order things, you know, and you get them. Once you get them and the size is not right or something, you know, I like to buy my clothes and take them right with me instead of ordering them.
You know I love an in-person shopping moment.
Yes. Well, in my travels, I'm bebopping around trying to find stuff I need.
Okay.
I do always come across and always buy the chocolate-covered Better Made chips.
Oh, dude.
Huh.
And they're not going to have them this year.
They do not have them this year,
oh,
which explains
feelings,
a lot
man.
Why I haven't been able to find them.
Hurt my feelings.
So Better Made has been producing this for a lot of years. Mark Costello, the VP of Better Made for sales and marketing, says they aren't being made in 2025, partially due to rising costs of steel and chocolate, but they also just wanted to change things up. Costello told the Detroit News, "We're taking a break this year. The costs have risen for sure, but the long and short of it is we more so wanted to take a break." Now, they have other holiday stuff and gift stuff and things like that that you can still buy.
Yeah.
But the chocolate-covered chips this year.
Man, I'm gonna miss
I've never
those.
Had
a commission.
Oh, you got it.
I've never had it, so I'm not in that.
So you don't. I'm losing you can't out miss here, what you but... haven't had. Yeah.
So they do say in the end of the story that Alpine Chocolate House, which has locations all over Michigan, they have a Plymouth location as well. They do have them. They are making them. Maybe I'll stop over there and get some for us.
Okay.
That sounds
taste
good.
Test.
Yeah, I mean, it's the salty sweet, right? Obviously, sure. That works.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But there's just, it's now become like a tradition. You got to get the chocolate covered chips this time of year, but Better Made's taking a break.
Oh, God.
Which I will say, from a marketing perspective, is pretty genius. Because then when they come back, it's like...
Oh, it's going to be a run.
It's going to be a run on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I got to tell you about this story real quick. These two Macomb County men who are behind bars right now trying to cheat a court-ordered DNA paternity test. Prosecutors say Mark McCracken arranged for 36-year-old Derek Harrison to impersonate him during a DNA test to avoid being identified as the father of a 2-year-old. Investigators say Harrison submitted his own DNA while posing as McCracken, and the initial test incorrectly showed McCracken was not the child's father.
Well, not the father.
Right. But the mother recognized Harrison from a photo the county sent and says she suspected McCracken was trying to hide the child from his current wife. So Macomb County Prosecutor Pete Lucido has charged these two with fraud.
Pete Lucido's on it. These kids
always.
And family issues.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wild.
Let's get Maury Povich over there.
Yeah. The results are you are not the father.
And then the celebration was so crass.
The incoming mayor of the city of Detroit joins us next here on JR Morning.
Where we're getting connected with the Detroit mayor-elect, Mary Sheffield, we'll be speaking with her momentarily. She's been pretty busy. Getting her, doing the transition, getting her team together and fitting a little marriage in there in between as well.
I'm going to ask her about her wedding fashion. That's top of mind of everyone, I'm sure.
Of course.
Don't take my question, Jamie.
Yeah, she has reappointed the police chief, which she said she would, Todd Bettison. She has also tapped her longtime chief of staff while she was city council president, Brian White, who's a good guy. I know Brian. He is going to be the new deputy mayor, and I think he's a good person for that job. So it's a lot of things to do. There's, January 1, she takes office, and she's ready to hit the ground running. And I think, she will be because she's been in the office of the city council for some 12 years or so, And she's been, right along with Mayor Duggan. Mayor Duggan also backed her in this latest election. But, I think she has a lot of work to do, and I think she's ready to do it and expand on the neighborhood, something that the mayor started. But I think she wants to really spend more time in the neighborhoods.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I think there's always a little bit of apprehension when you come off of one administration that's been really successful.
Sure.
Right? That has transformed, a city on the brink, a city that crossed the brink. I mean, in bankruptcy.
I mean, it was in bankruptcy.
Largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history.
Right.
I mean, to go from that to where we are today is a unbelievable achievement for Mike Duggan and his administration. And then when Mike Duggan says, look, I'm done. I want to run for governor.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have somebody else that's going to come in. And it's going to be different. Mary Sheffield is going to do things her way. She's going to put her own stamp on the city. And again, not that it's a bad thing. It's just you're coming off of something that's been successful. You've seen the fruits of that labor.
Yeah, the bar is high.
Correct.
And you got to keep the momentum going. We
Absolutely.
Have momentum right now in the city of Detroit, something we haven't had in a long time.
Staying in with all those stakeholders, those major stakeholders in the city, the businesses, and then, certainly spending more time in the neighborhoods.
And regional cooperation is another thing as well. Being able to, speak with our county executives, she will be part of the Big Four now. We had the Big Four, and so it'll look a little different with the three gentlemen from the other counties, Oakland, Wayne, and Macomb and mm-hmm. the mayor. And so that's going to be different too. But I think it's time. Let me tell you, I just think the city was behind when it came to choosing a woman for a mayor. There are so many major cities across the country that have female mayors, and I think we've kind of lagged behind, and I think it was just time. That's just my, you know, mm-hmm. my thought.
I think it'd be fun to have a female president. Can we get there sometime? I don't know.
I think if you
saying anything politically the people who've run.
No, yeah. no.
I'm just saying any woman.
I'll say something political. I think if you put the right candidate in, of course. Sure.
Yeah. Well.
Maybe that's not political. I don't know. But I think if there's somebody that is that candidate, of course. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, so in your mind, it's just not the gender, it's the candidate.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
I understand that there, of course, in history, have been views on women in the workplace, views on women in leadership positions. That I'm 37. That doesn't enter my lexicon.
But just because you don't think that way doesn't mean there's not an implicit bias against women in the highest.
Here's where I'm going with it. I think as time goes on, right, it doesn't become an issue because I think with people my age or younger,
mm-hmm.
it's not a factor. It's not something you look at. It's not something that you even recognize. I just think that's, at least for me, and I think that's the way society has moved. It's changed. I mean, women weren't able to vote. Now it's like,
yeah,
that's right. Crazy. Why wouldn't women be able to vote?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Women have to stay at home and raise the kids. Why? Go work.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I think just things have changed. So I think you get the right person. You're good.
Well, and I think it is. I think it is the person that's running, because when you look at all of these, like I said, the cities across the country where you have female mayors,
yeah.
you have governors that are female governors. So, you know, these constituents, the people in these towns and states and cities have voted for this person. They think they're a good candidate. We just haven't had a great candidate
president. Yeah, but let me also say it is noteworthy. It's not, you don't just fly by it. You don't whistle by the graveyard. I mean, the city has never had a woman mayor.
No,
and
no,
now we do.
History making.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're still trying to connect with her. She is, you know, I'm sure very busy doing a lot of different things. And
Should we talk about something else, or do we have her? Okay.
I think.
Okay, we're working on it.
Let me just talk about something light that's happening in our community. And if we get her, I'll stop in my
She's
track.
There. She's
oh,
here.
She is there. Okay.
All right. Mayor-elect, how are you this morning? Thanks for coming on.
I am doing great. How are you all?
We are doing well. Let me say congratulations on the win, because we haven't talked to you since you've won. And congratulations on the nuptials.
Thank you so much.
I mean, Mr. Ricky Johnson Jackson Jr., I mean, I don't know Ricky, but he's a Jackson and I'm a Jackson, so he's got to be a good brother.
That's right. Sounds good to me.
Oh, man. So first 100 days, you take office January 1st. What's the plan? What has to get done in those first 100 days?
So I am going to keep things very close. We have some very exciting news. We have an amazing transition process that's in place now. We have over 18 committees that have been formed with subject expert matters on each committee, ranging from neighborhood to corporate to civic and attorneys. I'm all coming together to shape the priorities for my first 100 days. That report should be released in the coming weeks. It will be released on January 1, the first day that I take office. And that plan will really kind of lay out what the first 100 days will look like from our office and my administration. So very excited. We do have some things in mind around community violence intervention that will be announced, some things around our youth and our babies in Detroit, and some things around education. So I want to kind of keep that close to me as we're still going through the process and solidifying what those actionable items will be for the first 100 days of our administration.
Have you already sat down with the county executives of Wayne, Oakland, Macomb counties? Have you talked to
those
them?
Those are all four. I've talked to all of them as far as just initial congratulations. We have some forthcoming meetings scheduled with them. Today is my Lansing day, so I have meetings with Speaker Hall. I have a meeting today with all of our Detroit caucus and Michigan legislative representatives, and so I'll be in Lansing pretty much most of the day today to start sharing my priorities and my agenda with all of our legislators. As we know, the state of Michigan and that support and that collaboration is going to be key to getting a lot of things done here in Detroit.
And I know you've had a competitive race with some strong voices, you know, like Reverend Solomon Kinloch and Sontel Jenkins. Is there room for former opponents in your administration?
Always room for discussion and, you know, understanding what makes sense. I've, you know, definitely have had conversations pretty much with everyone except my opponent. Still have not received a call from him, but I've had great conversations with Sontel Jenkins. In fact, member Durhall, my former colleague, I actually brought him on. He is going to be doing a lot of our governmental relationship building and outreach to the state level as around numerous initiatives around trying to reform some of our tax abatement process. And property tax reform and various initiatives that I need done with some support from the state. So happy he's coming on board. He has a lot of relationships with the business in the state legislature. And so very excited to work with him as well.
And you move quickly to name a deputy mayor and to reappoint the current police chief. What did you want those early decisions to signal about your leadership style and your priorities?
Well, one is that I keep my word, right? So I talked a lot throughout the campaign. In fact, I was the first candidate in the race to announce that, you know, if I win, that I'm keeping the chief. I say he's done a phenomenal job. Crime has drastically decreased. And we do know that in light of that, we still have a lot to do around perception of crime. And that is what this administration is going to be really, really working on. We want people to feel safe. We don't really want to keep citing numbers and data. You want neighborhoods and people to feel safe in the city that they love. And so Chief Bettison is just a phenomenal chief. He is a people centered chief. He understands that policing is not just about law enforcement, but it's also about addressing the social issues. He was just an easy choice. I want him to know how serious I was to his leadership. And so I was very, very proud to announce him. And I think public safety is so, so important to the betterment of our city and to so many people in Detroit. And so I wanted to announce that first because I know how important public safety is. And then Brian White, my chief of staff, has really made a name for himself over the years. He served Detroit for 12 years, working with me as my chief of staff. He's been instrumental in a lot of my policy agenda, and just was super excited to announce him serving as the deputy mayor for the city of Detroit, and excited about his ability as well to get deals done and to really bridge that gap between community and corporate as well, too.
Madam Mayor-elect, we appreciate you coming on this morning and talking about your first 100 days and what your plans are for the future. Don't be a stranger. We support you 100% here at WJR, and we appreciate you coming on. We'll talk again soon. Have a great holiday.
Okay, you as well. Thank you, guys.
All right, coming up next, we have a special sweet deal for you.
When the holidays arrive, your home works overtime, from big family dinners to out-of-town guests, and the last thing you need is a plumbing problem slowing the celebration. That's why Shelby Mechanical is my preferred plumber for the holiday season and trusted by WJR's Inside Outside Guys. For decades, families have trusted Shelby Mechanical for reliable, honest, fast plumbing service, the kind you need when every moment matters. And to make your holidays even brighter, they're offering a special seasonal savings. $150 off sewer repair, $50 off snake or camera service, $25 off any faucet install. Whether it's a clogged drain, sewer issue, or faucet upgrade before the guests arrive, Shelby Mechanical has you covered. So keep your home comfortable, your gathering stress-free, and your plumbing in perfect working order. Call Shelby Mechanical, the plumbers you can count on this holiday season and all year long.
All right, need you to be caller number 9 at 800-859-0957. 800-859-0WJR. Get yourself a pair of tickets to see Josh Groban with special guest Jennifer Hudson in concert. Experience two of the most powerful and acclaimed voices sharing one stage for an unforgettable evening of soaring vocals and beloved hits. Josh Groban with special guest Jennifer Hudson, June 25th at Little Caesars Arena. Caller number 9 at 800-859-0957. You got a bonus chance to win. All you got to do is text VOICES to 800-859-0957. Official rules are at WJR.com. Tickets are also available for purchase starting at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. So you get a little pre-sale here. A little bit of breaking news for you. The inflation number, consumer prices rose 2.7% in November. That's slowing from 3% in September. So good news on the inflation number. That's down. Although you are dealing with some of the information that was collected during the government shutdown.
Right.
So that certainly plays a factor here, but that number at 2.7%.
Good news.
So some good news. Yep. Meanwhile, excuse me, we do have a wonderful, sweet deal for you here on WJR. It starts at 9 o'clock, and it's with one of our favorite establishments here in the area, Ackett's Pie. Zach Ackett's, the co-owner of Ackett's Pie Company, joins us this morning to talk about it. Zach, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing today?
We are good. We're well. We're even more excited about this deal. So tell the people what you got going on.
Yeah, we have a deal going on with you guys with $25 gift cards or $50 gift cards where you guys can get them half off.
So spend $25 and get 50 at Ackett's.
That's good. That's correct.
That's great. You can go on to WJR.com at the Sweet Deals page, and you'll be able to take advantage of that at 9 a.m., and it's a perfect time of the year for that.
Yeah, I mean, when gift-giving's huge and you want to save a couple of bucks, I mean, they're awesome gifts for friends, family, or just to have for yourself for Christmas party. I mean, come into our store, get yourself a couple of pies, and, you know, have a great time.
I know most people know Ackett's for, you know, sweet pies, but you guys also do those savory pot pies and soups. How did comfort food become such a big part of your story?
Yeah, well, you know, we try to put everything we can in around 10, since we have them. So, but, you know, pot pies are equally hard to make, and they're equally delicious. And we kind of wanted to balance things out a little bit to give their customers the ability to come in and get dinner and dessert. So with a big array of chicken pot pies to lobster pot pies to a couple other exclusive pot pies like buffalo chicken or, you know, Southwest.
And so you can get any of your favorite things that's been being made here for 30 plus years. Beyond pies, though, what other things can people get?
Sure. We do soups. We do cookies. We do cheesecakes. Sometimes we do a cheesecake cake over the holidays. We have all sorts of other little knickknacks like milk and other things.
Do you have a favorite? Like, can you possibly have a favorite pie?
Yeah. I know. With the pies. Yes. How do you pick a favorite?
Right. It's like a child. Like, how can you pick your favorite kid?
I mean, given the fact that I just had twins, it's a hard thing to think about.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, God bless.
Yeah, congratulations. That's fantastic. So $25 gets you $50 at Ackett's. WJR.com, Sweet Deals. We've got it for you. It's a great gift for the holidays. Whether you're just giving the gift card or you're bringing pies to dinner, make sure you take advantage of that. Zach Ackett's, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Happy holidays to you, and enjoy the holidays with the new one, little ones. That's great.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us on. Thanks for the deal.
Yeah, of course. You got it.
You got it.
WJR.com, Sweet Deals, to get this sweet deal from Ackett's.
$25.
It is a true definition of a sweet deal.
$25 gets you $50 to spend.
That's pretty good. Very good. You're going to continue to see a lot made of what Donald Trump had to say last night in his address to the nation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think as we turn the page on the new year, people really start to look forward into what we can expect, what's going to come down the pike. And there are some major questions still at play here for the president and this administration going into 2026. What's going on with Russia and Ukraine? Uh-huh. What is potentially developing with Venezuela?
Mm-hmm. Gaza?
Certainly the next phase of this. Then you've got the cost of things are still impacting people. So that is going to play a major role here.
Yeah, definitely, man. Those kitchen table topics. You can say one thing, but people are feeling something different in many households.
The Grinch just walked in here.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
You guys are killing it. You're doing great.
Kevin Dietz coming up in just a couple of minutes here on WJR.
I'm sure he'll be talking about the president.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll be talking about all the things. On all talk.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are we doing some shopping today? Is that the plan?
Yes, that's
that
obviously the plan.
That one needs to do some shopping, yes.
Yep, still need to hit up a couple of places. We're in the home stretch here.
We also have our holiday party
here.
We do.
Yes,
Cumulus
we do.
Cumulus Detroit. I can't wait to see what white elephant gift I might procure.
That's exactly right. All right, that's going to do it for us. Have yourself a wonderful Thursday. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Kevin Dietz and All Talk coming your way next.